Welcome to the Defence Forces podcast, brought to you by the Defence Forces Public Relations Branch.
Hello and welcome to the Irish Defence Forces podcast. My name is Captain Keane Clancy, and today we're chatting to Lieutenant Niall Dungan, who is a flight instructor with the Flight Training School in the Air Corps College. And we're going to talk about the Air Corps cadetship, which at the time of recording is open for applications until the 31st of May. Thanks very much for coming on, Niall. Not too bad, no. So just for kind of a breakdown of the podcast, what we're going to talk about, we're going to talk a bit about your own background in the Air Corps and like what made you want to join them. We're going to talk about the various phases. So we're going to look at the period of time that Air Corps cadets spend in the Corps camp doing conventional army-style training. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to talk about the ground school phase of the Air Corps cadetship. We're going to talk a bit about the flight training phase of the Air Corps cadetship. And then we're just going to finish up with a bit on the applications process and where you need to go to get information if you're interested in joining the Air Corps as a pilot officer. So I know you've old from in the cadet class that came after me, so I would have seen you, I think, on your first day in the Corps. Yeah. too many years ago now for me to think about. But so just give us a bit of a background, Niall, on just like yourself and like, you know, how long you've been in the Defence Forces and what made you want to join as an Air Corps cadet.
So I'm from Dunboyne in Meath, and I entered in 2013, having just completed Leaving Cert. So I was 17 at the time, finished the Leaving Cert, and then throughout that summer I would have been going through the application process for the Air Corps. Thankfully enough, I was lucky in in my application, and I started down the Curragh at the end of September, so 3 days after I turned 18, down in the Curragh camp. Yeah, so why I wanted to join, for me, I certainly did always want to fly, and obviously there are multiple options there for becoming a pilot, but there was always a draw for me to the military. The career variation that's available there, the potential for personal development, and the military always had a certain appeal to me as well. So that kind of swung it for me, and as I said, I was lucky enough to be successful in the application. So as you said, started then down in the Curragh in September 2013 for the ground or the military training side of things, which took 9 months. Went from there then back to Baldonnell to start the ground school phase. So for the ATPL, ground school subjects.
The ATPL is?
The Airline Transit Pilot License.
Ah, yeah, okay. We'll go into a bit later.
So the ground school phase, finished that, and then you go into the flying phase on the Pilatus PC-9. Flying phase took just about a year. Finished that, I was 20. So I was 20 when I was commissioned and qualified as a pilot. And then from there, I elected to my preference to go towards rotary wing and to fly helicopters. And thankfully enough, that went well, and I started onto a helicopter conversion course. Just after finishing the wings course. So that took just under a year to finish and to fully qualify on the Eurocopter EC-135. And then I stayed there in 302 Squadron in number 3 Operations Wing for a bit under a year, continuing with training, building hours in the aircraft and carrying out a certain amount of operational tasks. And then that brings us up to about 2018. Early 2018, I applied for a flight instructor's course, which are typically run in the flying training school.
Yeah.
So I applied for that. Again, luckily enough, I was successful in my application. I started in the flying training school, so back onto the Pilatus PC-9 to do the flight instructor's course. Another demanding course, took 6 months to complete. And then from there, I started into my current role, which is as a flight instructor there in the flying training school. So I've been there since. So that would have been late 2018, started instructing with the 35th regular Air Corps cadet class.
Yeah.
Instructing them from start to finish of their wings course. And that takes us up to about... early this year.
There you are, and
we're about to kick off again soon enough.
For a lot of people in the current series of podcasts we're doing on the three cadetships, the three services cadetships, it's you're always talking to someone who's basically turned from poacher turned gamekeeper, who's been a cadet
yeah.
and now is back instructing cadets in various aspects. And just for our listeners, obviously yeah. the cadetship has changed in all services has changed slightly from the days when, say, the people we have on talking about have done it. And obviously, given the current COVID-19 situation, things might be a little bit different again as the Defence Forces tries to deal with the situation and continue to train people as best we can within means and capabilities and within HSE guidelines. So bear in mind that this is what we're going to try and do here is give a flavour of what the Air Corps cadetship entails and Air Corps pilot training entails. It's a very detailed subject. There's an awful lot in it, but it'll hopefully... leave people go away with a bit more information than they had before. So, first of all, you mentioned the 9 months that you spent in the Curragh camp, which as I recall it, when we had our Air Corps class with us, it's you're basically just a member of the Army class for that period of time, all the same sort of things. What did you take from that, or what is the utility of that to an Air Corps pilot?
You know, the goal here is to become a military pilot, so not just a
of course, it's important to distinguish. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I suppose that's your socialisation into the military, and the big things that I suppose we want to achieve by sending the cadets down to the curve before flight training is to develop their character, develop their leadership skills, mm-hmm. teamwork, and I suppose to instill a sense of responsibility and the Defence Forces values in them before they come back and start their flight training. And it's quite an effective method of doing that. As you mentioned, I was, for me, it would have been 9 months,
yeah.
and then I completed the rest of the of my wings course as a cadet. It's slightly different this year, so for the 2020 competition, the cadets will actually be doing the full 15 months with the Army,
yeah.
And they'll be commissioned at the end of that. That's subject to change, but for this year, it'll be 15 months in the Curragh.
Yeah.
And then the wings course and the ground school will be conducted as an officer, as a junior officer.
Commissioned officer, which make it slightly different, but the things that you're learning are still going to be the same.
Exactly, yeah. It's still the same course, yeah.
And like just for outside, again, we will be doing a full cadetship for anybody interested in applying for the Army on, or a full podcast for anybody interested in applying for the Army on the detail of what's going on. But for now, we're just going to talk about the kind of things that Air Corps cadets would take away from their time in the Curragh camp with the Army. And how that is advantageous going forward. Kind of talked about the military socialisation side of it, and I suppose the discipline you'd get and how that would translate over to like flight training. I mean, how did you find that?
Yeah, I think it definitely helped me a lot. You know, the resilience that you learn during that military training, because there are a lot of long evenings, long days of whether that's in ground school, you know, you're covering a lot of theory, or in the flying. For me, the discipline, as you said, that I learned in the Curragh certainly transferred across, along with the attention to detail, and helped me to motivate myself and stay driven, I suppose, throughout the school and the flying phase. I would certainly imagine so, yeah.
And you mentioned the kind of like flying the PC-9, it requires a certain amount of sort of physical and mental robustness as well. You said it pulls quite a lot of... of G's, as they call them. Not a pilot myself, but
PC-9 definitely. It's certainly a demanding aircraft to fly. Yeah. It can pull up to 7G. You certainly need to be in a good physically fit state to fly it. And of course that's why we have the fitness requirements on initial entry. And all cadets and pilots have to conduct air medical exams once a year to make sure that they are in fit state to be flying the aircraft.
How did you find, like, on a personal level, did you enjoy your time with the Army, or did you find it a bit?
I did enjoy it overall. It certainly was a tough 9 months, but I would say that the negatives, I should say, were balanced by positives. Yeah. You know, there's a lot to be gained. There are a lot of good memories and a lot of achievements down there that I'm certainly glad to have taken part in and to have done.
Yeah, of course, as we're all part of the same organisation, and establishing those kind of baseline sort of military principles, you know, is kind of important before going on to the more technical and specialised stuff, which is one of the reasons why, I suppose, from an Army point of view, we'd put people go through a full cadetship now to become engineering officers, to go through the full normal cadetship or ordnance officers, and then they specialise after that. So you did your 9 months in the Curragh, and then you move up back up to Baldonnell to begin the process of learning how to become a pilot.
Yeah.
So can we go into maybe like the ground school aspect a bit? Like what is ground school?
Ground school, so, well, there's a uniform change first off.
Yeah.
You're out of the Army gear and into your blues, which is a welcome change.
Yeah.
Ground school is your first time now starting to look at flying and becoming a pilot. There are 14 theoretical aviation related exams that you need to go through. Typically takes 6 to 7 months.
Okay.
And they're in line with the Irish Aviation Authority requirements for ATPL knowledge. So the kind of subjects that you cover, principles of flight, for example, the maths or the science or the theory of how aircraft stay in the air and what's going on that keeps them up there and what they experience. Meteorology, you know, learning about the weather, how to predict and forecast and analyse charts to be able to safely plan and then execute a flight or a mission. Communication, how do you talk on the radio, how do you talk to air traffic control? All things that is all knowledge that's going to be required before you ever get into an aircraft.
Yeah.
And I suppose that is something that's done slightly different as in our military pilot training, where we do all of those exams first.
Yeah.
So before you ever sit in an aircraft, you complete and you have to pass all of those 14 exams.
Okay.
Whereas in some civilian schools or elsewhere, you might be doing a certain amount of theory exams and then a certain amount of flying and both integrated with each other.
Okay, so the idea is get the theory done first.
Yeah, get all the knowledge done and then be able to focus on the flying when that time comes around.
We've mentioned so far now, like, the ground school is like heavily focused on sort of the academic side of it. And I think when we were chatting about the podcast, you mentioned that there's 14 total subjects that you cover during ground school.
Mm.
It sounds like a kind of really intense sort of an academic time.
Yeah, it certainly is. You know, as I said, six or seven months of non-stop lectures and exams over and over again until you've got the 14 done. But I suppose that's where the discipline and the resilience that you learn in the army training down the Gard, that's where that comes into play, because you're very much left to your own devices in terms of in the evenings, and no one's going to come knocking on your door to make sure you're studying. It's up to you to keep your head in the books and to get through all the content. But you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel, and that light is starting fine in the PC9. So there's a good amount of motivation there to get through it.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you've got the fact that you've all your classmates who are in the exact same boat as you, doing the same thing.
I suppose you're all kind of supporting each other
as well.
Like,
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And chatting it through in the evenings. And if you're ever, you know, if there's something that you can't get your head around, there's always some door that you can go and knock on and have a chat with someone about.
Yeah, so I suppose you're right. Like, there's that carrot at the end of the period of training, which is that you get to get in the plane and start to learn how to actually operate.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you mentioned, like, it's a 75% pass rate for each exam.
So each exam, 75% pass rate. They are multiple choice. We sit in-house exams in the Air Corps as well, but then we also do sit the Irish Aviation Authority exams, again, just to show that we're meeting that standard and we're at the required level
to meet
the IAA's requirements.
What that kind of says to me going forward is that, like, it's an intense period of time, but by the time you actually get to a position to sit into an aircraft, you've heavily covered everything, so you're getting the best sort of training that you could possibly get.
Yeah, you've a lot of knowledge by that stage, by the time you're getting into the aircraft, and that's before you even start looking specifically at the aircraft-specific knowledge.
It's important to stress, I mean, we touched about it slightly when we talked about sort of phase one of the training, but an Air Corps pilot is also a military officer and a manager, and there's a personal responsibility element to it as well. So at that point, they might have a little bit more freedom as commissioned officers when they're doing their flight training, but it's all personal responsibility, and you have to pass the same exams.
Yeah,
you have
absolutely
to do the same thing.
It will, but you are still, I suppose, confined to the wings course, and that's your primary focus.
Yeah.
At that stage, yeah.
If you're looking for that dream of actually flying, I mean, yeah, it's a tough old time, but you know, if you really want to do it, you'll do it. Like,
no, I would certainly agree with that. Yeah.
And as regards kind of time for like ground school, so what kind of time we talk about for how long ground school takes?
So 6 to 7 months.
6 to 7 months.
Yeah, normally delivered by Air Corps instructors. And yeah, as I said, it's a long slog of the repetitive lectures and exams over and over again. But you know, as we were saying, there is that light at the end of the tunnel.
I suppose with regard to like a programming time, you know, from the point of view of writing the programs in the flight training school,
yeah,
I presume there must be like a structuring side of it where you want to give them, obviously students need to be given time to study, they need to have their classroom time, but they also probably need activities, recreational time to unwind or physical training or all that kind of stuff.
So absolutely within the program, so typically the morning starts at 08:45 local time with a weather brief. Delivered by either the flying class or the ground school class if they've covered meteorology at that stage. So the weather brief given to all the staff and the students of the school. And then from there, the flying class will obviously go and those who are on the program will start flying. At the ground school class, will start into lectures.
So there's normally two classes in it, which I suppose, given the length of the course, there will be two classes.
Yeah, two classes on the go at any one time, typically. And then the ground school class are very much scheduled for then from 9 till 5 lectures with you know, obviously lunch break as required. But within that, over the course of the 6 to 7 months, there will be a certain amount of study time built into that programme.
Yeah.
And there'll be a certain amount of physical fitness time built into that programme in conjunction with the fitness centre in Baldonnell and other things as required.
And I suppose that's connected to not only remaining physically fit because you're part of a military organisation, but also it's good for the head if you've had your head in the books for a long period of time to get out and go for a run or something like that.
Absolutely, it's actually a very nice place to run. Running a lap of the aerodrome in Baldonnell is 8 kilometres, so
yeah.
It's nice to hear guys talking about a lap of the drone quite a lot. It's a good, you know, to go out and clear the head or even while you're running be thinking through the theory that you've been learning all day. I'd say it's quite a good environment to learn.
Cool. So it's a good conducive environment for that. So you've done your 6 to 7 months of ground school, and you've passed all your theory exams, and you're now getting ready for the next phase, which is your flight school phase.
So, as you say, you finish your ground school. Before you actually get into an aircraft, there are a few things that you have to cover. So firstly, you need to learn about the PC-9. So the Pilatus PC-9, it's an advanced turboprop trainer aircraft. And the students need to conduct their computer-based training first. So that's technical type training, learning about the aircraft, learning about all the systems, you know, from the flight controls, how do the ailerons work, you know, how do the hydraulics work, how does the landing gear go up and down, how is the primary flight display powered, how does the engine work, how does the prop work, everything, so that you understand the aircraft that you're flying. And I suppose in the extreme scenario of if you were dealing with some sort of malfunction in the air, that you'd be able to diagnose it effectively and deal with anything as required in the air.
Yeah, so like when we were talking about it, you mentioned, so you do seven simulator sessions. So there's a simulator up there, first of all, before you sit into a plane.
Yeah, so you've got a fixed training device. So once you've got your computer-based training done, you start into a few simulator sessions. This is the kind of stuff that you don't need to be in the actual aircraft to learn. The likes of your pre-start checks, your engine start checks, your after-start checks, all the things that you don't necessarily need to be in an aircraft with a running engine for, to try to maximize on the availability of the actual aircraft themselves.
Okay, right. Sure.
So students spend a certain amount of time in the simulator, and then the final thing that they need to do is their aircrew survival training, because the PC-9 has that equipped with a Martin Baker ejection seat.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously, in an extreme scenario, you could find yourself ejecting over land, water, poor terrain in poor weather, and we're going to need to be able to...
Far from anybody else.
Yeah, you could potentially need to be able to look after yourself for a while on the ground. So the students will do their survival training for land, for sea, and learn about the post-ejection phase. So if you were to have to egress the aircraft, what drills would you go through?
Okay.
And how would you manage your equipment once you're on the ground and look after yourself in that regard?
Okay, and that's probably an aspect of it that people maybe listening in today wouldn't have thought about. You focus very much on the actual nuances of flying the aircraft, but what about what happens if you find yourself alone somewhere having had an issue in it? I mean, I know that the naval service as well and the army do an awful lot of survival training as well, but it's an aspect people mightn't think about too much.
Yeah, and as you said, it certainly builds on the survival training that cadets would have learned down in the Curragh.
Yeah.
As part of the military training. So it builds on that, and you're adding on to that and adding on the essential stuff for aircrew survival as well.
Is it that kind of specific sort of element?
Yeah.
Like to see survival element of its own is interesting as well, because we do the Air Corps do so many operations in conjunction with the naval service, like maritime defence and security patrols and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So for the PC-9 specifically, if you're in a scenario where you ejected over water, all going well, you'll be in the water with a dinghy that will have left the aircraft with you.
Yeah.
So being able to set that up, get inside, get warm, and be able to wait out for
help to arrive.
Yeah, more or less.
Wow. So okay. So you've done your seven simulator sessions. You've done your survival training, your computer based training, and you've looked at your aircraft egress drills. Like what happens if you actually have to eject from the aircraft. So first day, first flight. What is that like? What was that like for you?
First flight, it was great. I still remember it very well. The first flight, I suppose, is quite instructor heavy. The instructor will do most of the flying and point out things to you where you can connect the dots, I suppose, of what you learned in the computer based training and start tying in the stuff from your ground school phase with a certain amount of hands on. But yeah, that was great. You know, that flight is on your mind quite a lot throughout the military training, the ground school training. So it was nice to finally get into the aircraft and get started. From there, then you're pretty quickly into pretty high tempo learning environment. So you start off by looking at the effects controls. You know, how do you climb and descend? How do you hold straight and level? How do you taxi the aircraft? How do you take off the aircraft? I suppose you start looking at circuits. So circuits being focusing on the takeoff and landing phase, more or less taking off on a certain runway, flying a somewhat rectangular pattern, coming back around and landing again and doing that on repeat. So each circuit takes about 4 minutes in the PC-9, and that's quite a busy phase. It's quite a busy phase for students. There's a lot happens in that time, and obviously the landing phase, the takeoff phase, being some of the more dangerous portions of a flight, it's quite important that those skills are all learned well at that stage. So
it's interesting from the point of view, maybe it's telling on the quality of the training as well, that one of the first things you actually learn when you're doing these circuits is one of the hardest parts of actually piloting an aircraft is the takeoff and the landing side of it. I suppose, how long before you're actually in a position to pilot, say, the PC-9 on your own? I mean, how many flights do you have to do?
It's not very long. It's 20 flights.
Well, that isn't very much.
Yeah, so 20 flights into your first solo. And what that consists of is basically three circuits. So 12 minutes of flying, take off and land three times, and then taxi back to the ramp.
On your first day doing that, I mean, what was that like, as in the night before going, tomorrow I'm going to be flying this on my own? I mean, that must have been an amazing experience, must have been a nerve-wracking experience.
Yeah, it was, I suppose for me, the nerves thankfully didn't come out too much because you're so busy.
You're so focused.
Yeah, you've got a lot to do in those 12 minutes to three takeoffs and landings, and you know, you're running through checks, you're keeping on top of the aircraft, and I think it for me it really only sank in once I was landed,
yeah,
and I was taxiing back, and the satisfaction at that point came of, you know, that it just happened.
Yeah.
I've done my first solo in the PC-9, but it was absolutely a brilliant experience. It's interesting in the PC-9 because it's a tandem cockpit aircraft. The student normally sits in the front and the instructor sits in the back.
Yeah.
So as a student, you can't see the instructor. And you can hear him over the communication system, and you can, if he's flying the aircraft, you can see the controls move, but you can't actually see him.
Yeah.
So when you're flying on your own, there's no visual difference. You're still, everything looks the same to you, just that you're a little bit lighter in the air.
Yeah.
As opposed to maybe flying in a helicopter or a larger aircraft, or any other aircraft for that matter.
Where you can physically see the person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I suppose you still have the instructor on in your ear just saying, keep an eye on this, keep an eye on that. I mean, you're solo in the air yourself, but you obviously have radio comms with the tower or what have you.
With the tower, yeah. So you're in direct communications with air traffic control, but there's no... the plan would be for there to be no instructor input at all.
Okay, cool.
There is an instructor up in the air traffic control tower if anything goes wrong, but typically there'd be no correspondence there unless it was required or unless there was something that the instructor needed to discuss with the student.
It's just you.
Yeah, very much.
This is what we talked about. I mean, if you want to become a pilot and you want to become a military aviator, military pilot, this is what you're building towards.
Yeah.
It's you being in control of this aircraft.
Absolutely. And you know, the age entrance, I suppose, for the cadetship is 18 to 26. For me, I know that solo, I was 19 going solo in the PC-9. So it's a great opportunity to fly in quite an advanced aircraft and to get into your flying career at quite an early age from that perspective.
The coolness factor, like, you know, yeah. As we spoke when we recently did a podcast on sniping, and we kind of talked about the coolness factor of being a sniper, and there's a serious coolness factor associated with being a pilot as well.
There's a bit of that, maybe, yeah.
Especially in a military aircraft as well.
Yeah. No, it's certainly something that's good to be involved in. Very satisfying.
So you've done your first solo flight in the PC-9. And now, where does it go then from training? I mean, obviously, after 20 flights, you're not told you're a pilot. Now off you go. There's other things to do.
Yeah, so you start building on the flying from there. You start going towards, I suppose, more advanced circuits. So the likes of flapless circuits, if you've got no flaps available for landing, or if they've malfunctioned.
Are these on the back of the wings of the
back
aircraft?
Back of the wings, yeah. To give you more lift for typically the takeoff and landing phase, yeah. So flapless circuits, we practice with students at that stage. Then we progress towards glide circuits. So simulating that your engine has failed and you need to glide back to the airfield and land without the engine.
Would that actually be touching down?
Yeah,
onto the
So we set a very low power setting that simulates that the engine has failed, and teach students how to land from that scenario. Then we start moving out towards the training area. So we've got there's large areas of military airspace over the Midlands, predominantly, and so we start moving out there a bit more and looking at general handling of the aircraft. And this is where we start moving towards the likes of aerobatics. Progressing with our stall recovery training, spin recovery training, and this is where you're getting the student comfortable with the aircraft, comfortable operating the aircraft towards its limits. So I know we mentioned the 7G earlier. So this is where the aerobatic phase, I suppose, when you start experiencing G,
yeah,
and aerobatic maneuvers, which is certainly an enjoyable phase of the flying, and it's something that, you know, you see plenty of videos of online, and then you get to a stage where you're actually doing it yourself. But what that's doing is it's instilling confidence in the students in flying the aircraft, because if you can fly it towards the edge of the aircraft's envelope, then when you're doing the more mundane things or the more basic skills like flying straight and level, hopefully they'll seem a bit more doable.
They won't seem as extreme as doing a, I don't know, barrel roll or something like that.
Yeah.
Flying upside down and all that stuff must be crazy as well. Fantastic. And then with regard to, I think we mentioned in the podcast planning, like instrument flying or flying in heavy weather or all that kind of thing.
Yeah, so absolutely. The next stage then you'd be moving on towards is your instrument flying and starting to look at navigation. So instrument flying is basically what you're looking at there is, as opposed to flying by visual reference and looking outside at ground features and towns and roads and canals, To navigate, now we're looking inside the cockpit only. And what that enables us to do is fly in bad weather, fly through cloud, and not need to look outside. So You're relying on instruments, on radio beacons, on instrument landing systems, and GPS data to get around the place. It's something that I think can be daunting, but again, what a lot of it comes back to is your preparation on the ground, and taking in as much as you can from simulator sessions that would have been done beforehand,
yeah,
and applying that then to the flying that you do in the air.
Okay, well, so flying without being able to see anything in cloud must be fairly daunting as well.
It sounds worse than it actually is.
Oh, really? It's easy to tell us that here. After that, then you enter kind of more advanced phase, and you continue flying. How many flights on the PC9 would you complete before you're actually kind of your final testing, or how does that work?
It's 128 flights long. Yeah. So your final flight is an operational readiness assessment, and that's flight 128. So up to that stage, you'd have done your instrument flying. You'd have looked at medium and low level navigation. You'd have then progressed on towards advanced aerobatic maneuvers, and then towards the end of the wings course, start looking at night flying and navigation and formation flying. So formation flying from the perspective of, first off, as a follow aircraft, so flying in close formation, mm-hmm. which is a pretty demanding skill to develop, and then also as the leader of a formation. That'll be right towards the end of the wings course, going towards your operational readiness assessment.
Okay, and so for anybody who's kind of wondering what that might look like, if you were to be watching, say, the Easter Parade or something like that, those have the flying formation in various kind of V shapes and that kind of thing,
yeah,
over the top of fly past, that'd be an example.
That's flying information, yeah. Okay. So you're the lead aircraft is managing the any aircraft in that formation, and the follow aircraft are more or less keeping their position and holding their station.
So in this time you've like that's kind of an indicator of a real sort of level of mastery of the aircraft and being able to really, really control it in a kind of beyond sort of competent way.
Yeah, you're now not only responsible for your own aircraft, if you're leading that formation, you're now responsible for potentially multiple aircraft. So by that stage, yeah, the students should have a decent level of confidence and competence in the aircraft, yeah, to be able to manage those kind of flights, yeah.
And we will touch on this because it is true. Like, I mean, it isn't for everybody. Like, not everybody is. Mm. I mean, flights can be failed. Like, you're not guaranteed to become a pilot on starting this training. Mm.
Yeah. So yeah, as you said, unfortunately, it doesn't work out for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, we try to do the best we can to get everyone through the wings course, but ultimately, it's not for everybody. Mm-hmm. There are options at that stage, and for this year's intake, you're going to be an officer already by the time you, mm-hmm. you get towards your flight training. So if it were to unfortunately not work out at that stage, there are options like being retained in the Air Corps as a line officer, or being posted to another corps of the Army, or if you wish at that stage to resign your commission.
That's an option as well.
An option, yeah.
But as you said, everybody's is facilitated as much as possible to complete their training.
Yeah, it's obviously in the flying training school's best interest to qualify as many pilots as possible. So the opportunities are afforded to get through it as much as possible, yeah.
After you've done all these 128 flights and you've gone through all of this training, the ceremony at the end, so the commissioning ceremony for like an Army cadet is the culmination of it. But for people who will be coming in this year to join the Air Corps as cadets, they'll already be commissioned as officers. So what ceremony finishes up when you become a pilot, or what is that?
So that'll be the presentation of wings ceremony, yeah, or on your wings day,
yeah.
Which is when the general officer commanding with the Air Corps pins the military pilot's wings to your chest, and now you are a qualified military pilot at the culmination of all your training. So that's quite a special day.
How was it for you? Was it a fierce sense of pride, sense of achievement? Is the day just a blur? I know my own commissioning day is a bit of a blur, like, but...
It's a big weight off the chest anyway, yeah. You know?
You've made it.
Yeah, you're a long time thinking about that day and waiting for it to come.
Yeah.
And as we're discussing, there's no guarantees that you will get there. So when the wings are placed on your chest, absolutely there's a massive sense of satisfaction and pride. You know, your family and friends are there, as I said. And that's you now ready to be posted to an operational unit.
All right, and so in total, and I know it's kind of approximately, and again, just to note as well, as we said at the top of the podcast, the COVID-19 situation is still ongoing at the time of recording. So, I mean, that will more than likely affect how the Defence Forces is able to train people going forward for the immediate future anyway, certainly. And I know as well that like weather conditions and things affect like flight training and how long that takes. But approximately, how long are we talking from induction into the Defence Forces to actually receiving those pilot's wings?
Well, I suppose if so it's going to be 15 months in the Curragh, 6 or 7 months in the ground school, and then just over a year in the flying phase, you're probably looking at 34, 35 months.
Okay, right.
Yeah, round about that mark anyway, from day one to wings, yeah.
Okay, so you received your wings and you're now a qualified military pilot in the PC-9. Post your wings ceremony, where can you go? As in, what are the options? There's a number of different aircraft that the Irish Air Corps operates, like, so what's the...
Yeah, so there's, at that stage, you would have stated your preference, is what you can do. State your preference as to whether you'd like to go to on towards fixed-wing aircraft, larger fixed-wing aircraft, or into rotary-winged aircraft. So that would be either to number three operations wing, which is our helicopter unit, or towards number one operations wing, which is where our fixed wing aircraft are. Typically, if you're going to go towards number three, which is obviously the route that I took, you're going to go onto a helicopter conversion course on the EC-135 to qualify as a helicopter pilot. And then from there, typically spend a certain amount of time on the 135 before progressing on to our bigger or a medium utility aircraft that goes to Weston 139.
Okay.
And fly that. We've got six of those. Other options in number three down the road could be the Garda helicopters, which again are EC-135s, slightly different variants. But they're all options there within number three operations wing.
Okay.
Or if you were to go towards the fixed wing side of the house, we've got two CASA CN-235 maritime patrol aircraft. Mm-hmm. There's the Learjet 45, the government or the ministerial transport aircraft. And then we currently have one Pilatus PC-12, soon to have four Pilatus PC-12 intelligence, surveillance and reconnaissance aircraft.
Which are the newest additions to the Air Corps fleet.
Yes, yeah, newest addition.
And we'll be doing, to know it out there, we'll be doing podcasts in the coming months on the various different aspects of all three services and on various types of equipment. So watch the space, you may see more detail on all of those. So you go on your, but also there is the aspect as well that you're also a military officer in a military unit. So there are responsibilities that come with that as well.
Absolutely, yeah. So typically alongside your flying duties, you'll have some ground responsibilities as well. You know, as you said, you're an officer as well. And in fact, you're an officer first and a pilot second. So typically, you're posted to a unit and given some sort of responsibility, whether that's a unit flight safety officer or if you're involved in operations. For me, that was it for me. I was the unit second in command of operations in number three, until I went back to the flying training school for the instructor's course. And you obviously have to manage your time between your responsibilities on the ground and the flying aspect of it.
I mean, that's an interesting, because that's what kind of differentiates you as like a military aviator, gives you that sort of level of responsibility. If people have been listening at home, have been listening to this, and they said, oh, that sounds like something I'd really like to do, what's the system for applying, or how does it work?
So it's an online application this year. First phase of that will be online psychometric testing, and that's unsupervised at home. So find a quiet room and spend a few hours doing the psychometric tests, or however long it takes. From there, then, if you're past that stage, you're then in towards the military and aviation assessments, which would all take place in Casement Air Base in Baldonnell. So that starts with a fitness test, which will be in line with the Army fitness tests. It's a 1.5 mile run, and then push-ups and a certain amount of push-ups and sit-ups within 60 seconds.
Just to kind of go back, because we'll talk about the sort of physical fitness aspect of it, but regard to the online application as well, there are, and we won't go into heavy detail here because it's available in the terms and conditions on the website on military.ie on the Air Corps Cadetship page, but there are a number of kind of academic standards you will have to have met before applying.
Yeah, so it depends on if you're entering with or without a Level 8 degree. Mm-hmm. So if you've got a Level 8 degree, you can apply, or if you're straight from Leaving Cert, and there are certain a minimum number of higher level subject grades that you need to have achieved, and a minimum number of ordinary level grades.
Okay, and as we said, they're available in the terms and conditions on the Air Corps Cadetship page on military.ie for anybody who's looking at them. So to go back, so you've done your online application, and then you're invited to do the fitness assessment in Baldonnell.
Yeah. So fitness assessment, it's a 1.5 mile run. For males, that needs to be done in 11 minutes, 40 seconds. For females, it's 13 minutes and 10 seconds. Mm. And then you've got 60 seconds to do 20 push-ups and 60 seconds to do 20 sit-ups.
Okay.
And if you pass that, then you're on to the next stage.
After that, there follows group assessments.
Group assessments, again, to see how candidates, interact with different people in a group, their teamwork skills, the leadership skills, and you're going to have a number of assessors watching at that point and trying to gauge who the top performers are in that group. From there, then you're on towards the aviation assessments,
which are real specific tests for the Air Corps.
Yes,
a lot of these will follow. A lot of services will have their own distinct ones, so this is real specific stuff for the Air Corps.
Yeah, specific for an Air Corps pilot cadet. So more psychometric testing will be done at this stage, except this time it's going to be supervised, unlike the first round, which is at home. So supervised psychometric testing, psychomotor testing, cognitive testing, all trying to, you know, to pick out the candidates who have the best natural ability to be military pilots and aviators.
There's a kind of a hand-eye coordination aspect to that, and there's sort of a, that you might not necessarily have to have the same kind of aptitude for if you were going for other services.
Yeah, hand-eye coordination, multitasking, more or less playing computer games to try to to find the candidates who have those the psychomotor skills, yeah.
Okay, well, so that's the kind of, that's the unique aspect of it. So you've done your overnight, and then there's interviews after that.
So you do a realistic job preview there as well.
It's at a different stage. Like you don't come out in the group assessment and then the psychomotor testing and the psychometric testing and then have to go straight into
the interview.
You're given time.
So you would do a psychological assessment as well with an aviation psychologist, and then from there then go in towards the, if you're successful in the previous stage, go for your final interview. Final interview typically is in front of a panel of six, and again, you're looking for, well, what will be looked for there is the competencies, specific competencies. Again, as you said, they're all in the terms and conditions, but you know, the likes of decision-making, problem-solving, your planning and organising ability, your ability to work in a high-pressure environment or under stress, good communication skills, your own motivation and discipline, a certain amount of technical aptitude, and then a certain amount of maturity for your respective age on entering.
Yeah, of course. So. And like as I remember, because I know the competency-based interviewing is similar across all services. Yeah. It's an opportunity for you to showcase what you in your life have done thus far under these headings. And as we said, it's all available in the terms and conditions. It's explained to candidates who are brought onto that stage what they need to do in order to prepare themselves. And it can be I remember being very nervous in the times that I went for the army. It is a nerve-wracking thing going and sitting down in front of those six people.
I had just done my leaving cert. I was 17 years old with a mouthful of braces. So thankfully they were gone before I went down to the Curragh. But
you know what we want to say to people is that it's a bit intimidating, but it's your opportunity to show how good you are or why you should be taken on. And given a cadetship in the Defence Forces across the three services. And we'll be discussing competency-based interviewing in all of our podcasts that we're going to be doing on cadetships, and also in any podcast we do on recruitment into the enlisted ranks. And it's something that happens across the board in any application to the Defence Forces. You say you're successful in your interview and you pass the interview phase and you move on. What comes after that then? Say you're successful in that.
So from that stage, a panel is made up of candidates who've passed the final interview for medical assessment. And that's the kind of final stage is passing an air medical examination to ensure that you're medically fit to initiate or to start a cadetship. And things like your vision, your hearing, body measurements are taken.
And of course, there are certain standards and they're all outlined in the T's and C's. And then if you're successful with that, you then put on a panel. I presume, and giving your offer
depending on the number of offers that are being made that year, then the top, you know, whether it's 5 or 10, whoever many is being taken, will be sent emails offering them a cadetship.
Obviously, the cadetship is open until the 31st of May for this year. So if anybody's interested in applying, we would encourage them to visit the current competitions page on military.ie. I think there's an awful lot of information in what we've discussed today for anyone interested in applying for the Air Corps Cadetship, or indeed for anybody that has an academic interest in it. Thanks so much for coming on and speaking to us, Niall. Really appreciate it.
No, thanks for having me, Keane.
For our listeners out there, as always, keep an eye on Defence Forces social media platforms and military.ie for further updates on the Irish Defence Forces. For serving members, we encourage you to check out the members area of military.ie as well. As discussed, the Defence Forces Cadetship competition is currently open until the 31st of May 2020. And for information on all services cadetships, please visit the current competitions page on military.ie. Today's episode was produced by Gunnar Pádraig Sullivan and Sergeant Paul Keeley. The Irish Defence Forces podcast will be back soon with another episode. And as always, to everybody out there, stay safe.